Hey, folks, one of the Redneck Country Podcasts. I am on with the man that is always on with me, Mr. Real Redneck, Bill Tom. Bill, are you there?
Happy whatever day of the week it is, gentlemen. I'm here and ready to have some good conversation today.
Whatever the day of the week it is. I really don't have a clue. I'm with you. We're just trucking along. And a special treat. Once again, somebody could say that, is again the patriarch of Redneck Country, my father, Real Redneck Don Millard. Dad, are you there?
I am here. Beautiful hot weather, great times.
All righty. So I want to start out by saying, folks, we've got some action-packed podcast coming down the pipe. If you're listening to this one, be sure to tune into the next few that we got coming. All, as far as we're concerned, they've all been awesome, but yes, we've got some others coming down by request. So we're going to be discussing some trap shooting, sporting clay, skeet shooting, kind of the sports side of shotgunning. And therefore, we're going to get into some technical stuff and the differences between the different variations of shotguns. So from a trap gun, a sporting clay gun, what makes those specific to that sport or genre, if you will, versus a hunting gun? And then we're going to get into some, probably some more technical stuff. I know Bill loves the technical side, so we're going to
Super excited about that. It's going to be some good conversation for sure. Hopefully it doesn't get too deep, but I'm sure it's going to be very interesting with what we got to bring to the table.
Yeah.
All your years of experience is going to come out in recording for sure.
Well, and yours. So we're hoping we're going to have some fun with it. So be sure to tune in. That's going to be a blast as far as I'm concerned, because I love talking about shotguns. And so we're going to go down that road and hopefully even get into, you know, how you can get into sporting clay, skeet shooting, trap shooting, right from just practice and the various gun clubs around to all the way to competition and what is called registered shoots. So still be sure to tune in for those. We got another one coming down where I'm going to say this on the record, so it is locked in, recorded. We're going to have the Tom family on. You are going to get some insight into who is this Real Redneck Bill Tom. And from the other side, what I like to say, the true side of the almost guy. And so there you go, Bill. I've said it online. I've said it recorded.
You put it out there.
It's going produced. So we're going to have them all. Candace, Hunter, Cheyenne, the gambit, hopefully. And
maybe
we can
even get my brother and my mom on, or my dad. They're all hunters, but we can get some stories and maybe some short snippets from them too, just to hear what they have to say. Hopefully nothing too embarrassing.
Now I'm even more excited. I'm excited for that. Probably now more than the shotgun one, to bring all those folks in. It's going to be awesome. So we're going to have that. It's been, it's now been on air. It's said, so we have to do it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, no backing out. And then, we've got some guests coming up too. We've lined up some more guests. We've had, Nick Obermach from Pond Predators on quite a bit, and he's always a great time and gives us some fishing stories, and then always gives us some recipes. And so we've got some other guests coming on that we haven't had on before that we're excited to bring on, and we'll kind of keep that a secret. So by all means, I'm plugging the crap out of the podcast now, because it's getting good. We're 24. This is our 25th episode, and they're just gonna get better from here. And so to kick this one off, Bill, how was your week?
Holy cow, this was a good week. I mean, we had a lot of cleanup activity going on around the house. You know, with the turkey hunting season over.
I was going to say, the honeydew lists are coming out now, right? The turkey season just ended. They're like, ha, 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 ha. You're on quarantine lockdown. Nothing's open. What are you going to do? Well, you're going to come with me. We've got some things to do.
We've got some stuff to do. And you know what? To be honest with you, last weekend, I think I finished all the major projects on my list. So now it's time to start redoing my boat.
The boat? What about the Volkswagen Beetle hot rod you got going on?
Yeah, that is in parallel path to the boat. But to be honest, the Volkswagen is more of a priority to me than the boat. But I didn't know if you wanted to talk about that with
I've seen pictures. It's got to get done. Folks, it is so close to done. It's unbelievable. So I vote Volkswagen.
I've got a 1972 Volkswagen Super Beetle that is full body off chassis restoration going on. every nut, bolt, fastener has been replaced. Every part piece has been redone. Motor, everything is ready to go. I need about, 10, 12 more hours of body work before it goes into paint. And then it's just a matter of slapping components back together in the way I do it. So it could take me a little while.
No doubt. Give me 1 second, Bill. Sorry. We lost Dad. He's coming back in. So, Bill, Volkswagen. So, yeah. My vote is Volkswagen Beetle.
Yeah. No, so I've got a 1972 Volkswagen Super Beetle that I'm doing a full body off chassis restoration on. Every nut bolt has been taken off. Every piece has pretty much been restored from original state. I need about 12 more hours of body work on it, and I can be putting it into primer, then paint, and then start to slap things back together. So it's been a labor of love for sure. And Don, I'm sure you can understand the labor that goes into a hobby of cars, but
is it going to be restored or are you hot rodding it?
No, I, to be honest with you, the only thing I'm doing that's different is I souped up the engine a little bit. I took out the heater boxes, so there's not going to be any heat in it. And the rest of it is factory original, restored. With obviously, I'm not going to go factory original color. It's going to be a burnt orange. And I got chrome all over the engine, and seats have been redone, and it's going to be my original. But everything on it is 72.
Are you not going to lower it?
No, I'm not going to lower it. I got I went with a different style rim on it to start off with, and then I went back to factory 4-on-130mm pattern, and now I'm going to have a lower profile tire on it with a little bit bigger rim and a little bit wider tire, and it's going to be the only non-original dimension basically on the car.
See, I'm not an original kind of guy.
But they are nice. I like them. Done up original like that. They are a fun little car. Fun ride. I'm looking forward to seeing your car when you got it done, Bill.
Yeah. My dad had a 1967 Volkswagen Beetle when I was a kid, and he restored that in our one car garage. Basically, our basement was turned into a Volkswagen dealership with all the parts that he took off and put down in our basement when I was 4 or 5 years old. But I remember that, and he sold that to buy us a tent trailer so that we could go on a family trip out west. And, as much as the trip was a good trip, he always loved and wanted his car back. And this is kind of a way to connect everything back together. And he's really, really anxious to see that car come together. And I'm anxious to throw him the keys and say, here, take it for a ride.
Right. Yeah, on. That's awesome.
All right. So I'm going to ask you a question. Are you ready?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So 1972 Beetle restoration, A, Todd's premise is I don't like any car. And I know I go with Dad to these car shows and I see these dudes with their I'm going to call them antique cars, but they're old cars. And they're like, yeah, everything's original. And I'm like, it wasn't that great when it came off the line in the 62. Why would it be good in 2020 when it's a 62? Rip that sucker down, put on some new jazz, lower it, put on some massive rims, put on some rubber, like pound out a stereo system in there. There better be a 454. I want some big freaking cans coming out the back end. So that's my whole theory on hot rods. If you're going to be that much love with a car, it's that. And I get it. Guys are like, oh, it's all original. That's lost on me. I just like, because I guess I'm a bit of a technology dude too. So newer technology is much cooler. So to me, soup that sucker. I mean, I want that big whale fin Porsche thing that they put on the Beetles, because really, otherwise it looks like a dinky car. No offense, Bill. But then lower that thing, put on some chrome rims, maybe some dingle balls in the back window, take the back seat out, replace it with some subwoofers. You're good to go.
I'm 41 now. I'm looking for a cruiser that I can take out of the garage on a Friday night with my wife. Go up to Collingwood for an ice cream, nice cruise.
Yeah. I don't so need the you leave on a Friday, you'll get there on Sunday for your ice cream and then turn around.
And at this point, you know what? If that's the way it is, that's the way it is.
You stop every half an hour, turn the crank, Where you go.
You know, recharge the battery and then push it a little bit more.
That's
it's a labor of love, and it's a labor of love, and I absolutely can't wait until I can turn the key and make things move, as opposed to just pulling it out of the garage on the cart that it's sitting on right now. But
so. I hear you. It looked good, but I do like the picture you sent me with your. This is similar to paint job. I like that whole car, but I mean, it was like an inch off the ground.
Yeah, mine won't be that low. It'll be a little bit higher than that, but not much.
Well, we'll work on that. We get the other Toms on here. We'll get Hunter on our side. Yeah.
I'm sure he'll be looking for that. But yeah, and then that project, and I got the boat that I'm going to do. Like I was saying, I got a 16-foot aluminum fishing boat that I got to gut and redo the casting decks on the front and back and the floor in. And that's more of just a putter project. And if it gets done this year, great. If not, well. At least I can strip it and use it. So.
See, I got a tangent to go on that one.
Sure.
Because I just have a little duck boat, a little 12-foot John boat. And we take it up to, like, everybody knows that listens. I'm not a big water dude. But I will go up north and hit the little landlocked lakes and catch bass and pike. And so that boat's nice, but you want to have the casting deck and you want to have the floor in it, right? So that if a little bit of water comes in, it's under that floor, and then you drop something, it's a clang on the aluminum. And so I took the time to do all that. And Megan and Avery helped me, my daughter, we sanded it all down and I painted it all camo and got it looking good, put the carpet in. I put a casting deck on this thing. The problem that I did not think about, because I am not a math major, is I put the front casting deck, and I wanted that like the bass boats, where you could put a seat up there, and you could sit up on that casting deck. And I got a trolling motor with a foot-operated pedal that you lift down, and it mounts to the front. And I built a special mount for it that it slides up and in and clicks on, and now you can lift it in there like a bass boat. So the first time we went up to the cottage up north, and Dad and Jen and everybody were kind of sitting on the deck of the cottage, and I said, "All right, maiden voyage, let's try this out." And I took that out with the regular gas motor out to the middle of the lake, and they could all see me. I wasn't that far off the dock, really, but I was out there. I put that motor down. I sat in that front captain chair, and I hit the thrust on that. And holy geez, the neighbors in the cottage beside were howling, rolling down the grass, because, I mean, I was inches from drinking that water. That thing. I built that casting deck sitting up too high, and then you put my body up on a nice high pedestal chair, and then you hit the thrust on that thing. I almost capsized her, and well, that was the end of that. We fished the rest of the week without that casting deck on it, but it looks good. If you just look at it, it's like, oh, that is a wicked looking boat. It's just not usable.
Well, I mean, you were close. You were almost there, right?
Yeah. Megan could sit on it.
This almost thing is more and more, you know, a shared thing than you think. I'm hearing a lot of stories that, well, I almost had a bass boat, but that really didn't work out very well for me.
Yeah. Yep. Almost.
Almost.
Almost. All right, Dad.
Yeah, there you go. So that's what I got.
Yeah, so no, that's... Got projects. See, turkey season's over. It's project time. I've been the honeydew list. I've had to weed the gardens and help put bricks down and make a new wall around our gardens. I moved some ferns. I got the grass cut. Somewhat cleaned up the basement. I've been loading shells because our gun club opened.
I was going to say it. I saw you were building another wall, not just bricks, but shells too, eh?
When you've got four guys all buying supplies for reloading and wanting to shoot, it takes, and then you got COVID, like I mentioned the last time, Scotty not coming over to help me load shells because it's COVID. So I'm down there
Sounds like an excuse to me, Scotty.
Amen. I'm down there knocking out flat after flat after flat. But yeah, so it's pretty impressive. When you get it all done, you're pretty proud. So I built that wall of Winchester boxes with our reloads in it. So that's what I've been doing. And
Well, maybe.
It depends. We could talk. Is your gun club's opening up there? We can have a conversation. So
yeah.
So that's what I've been doing. So Dad, what about you? What have you been up to? I know what he's been up to. I'm afraid to ask.
Lots of stuff. Like you mentioned trap shooting, and you were right. Like, we hadn't trap shoot for several months. And so it gave me a chance to get away from all the bad habits. And so I've been hitting my fair share of 25s back at practice. So I'm kind of hoping that stays. We're having a good time on Thursday nights practicing. Nothing in the future about registered yet, but we're having a good time practicing. And of course, I've been looking after Todd's two daughters every day. They get dropped off from 8 to 6 every day because he's working in the house and Jen has to go to London. And boy, do they keep me busy. But Avery follows me around and I just give her jobs and we just go to it. And I had three posts break off one of my fences, and I wanted to design my own rustic shed in the backyard with a front porch on it. And I couldn't do that until I got the fence fixed and got rid of my two old worn out metal 6x6 sheds. So I stuck three new posts in the ground, cemented them in, and then we bolted the old broken posts to the new ones, and that fixed that up. Well, then the neighbor mentioned that he's had a bad back, and he had a whole load of wood leaning up against the fence on the other side behind his shed. And I said, well, you know, you're just getting rid of it. He said, sure. And I went, okay. So I thought, well, I can get a truckload of wood for Todd. So Avery and I, we filled a wheelbarrow.
I thought I seen movement out my back window today. I wasn't quite sure, but I thought I did.
Yep, I was there. And so we filled my truck right full, my pickup truck right full. And today I took it over and stacked it in behind his shed. So they got a whack load of firewood now that neighbor gave me. So we just been busy. And of course it's been hot. So I've been taking the girls over to my daughter's for a swim every afternoon, and they've been loving that. And yesterday Jen called and said, we finally wore AV out. She was asleep at 9:30.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you can't. And finally 9:30 seems to, she's six. She should have been asleep an hour ago. It ain't happening. She does not, man. She will last. But
I got one of those too. You should be in bed an hour ago. You put her there, and there's not enough stuff that you can do outside these days with the little ones, 6 years old, that wears them out. But
it blows my mind.
I'd be piling wood.
I tell you what.
And of course, I'm a hot rodder. So in between that, I've been trying to find times to back the 23T bucket out into the laneway and just admire it in the sun and take it for a cruise when I get a chance. And so that's lots of fun. There was one day last week, I got it sitting out there, and a car friend of mine, Terry, he goes walking by with the dog. So he takes a lawn chair out in my lawn, social distancing, and we have a visit. And then from Elm Street, I want another rider, Charlie. He's got a nice hot rod, and he's bike riding through the neighborhood, and he sees us sitting there in my car out. So he pulls in, he's on his bike in the laneway. And then Ken, a big car guy from down the street, he drives by in his pickup, pulls out front, and he's at the curb in his pickup, and we have a good old fashioned meeting there. That was awesome. So the next day I'm out there, I got it backed out there again, and we're out front, the kids and I are out front, and this roadster goes by, and he turns around and pulls in and stops. So he's at the curb. So we're talking to him from the curb. We're talking about his car. He's talking about mine. Turns out his daughter lives here. He's from Timmins. He come down to St. Thomas to help his daughter buy a house or find a house to buy. And so he trailered his roadster down so he could cruise around looking for houses. And that's what he was doing. So he stopped in for a visit when he saw my car out there. So today,
How far would you go with that comfortably in your car?
Comfortably? It's never comfortably.
seriously, since I lost the weight, it's comfortable. I could ride in it all day, and I don't have a problem rolling through the gears because I just reach down and it's second nature now.
As long as there's a gas station every 30 kilometers, Bill. Yeah.
When it's a 350 small block with a cam in it and a supercharger, a 671 blower, and two Holley 600 carbs, and the gas tank's 12 gallons. And we took the last time we went the furthest I've ever gone was London, and then beyond that we went to Plunkett's, which is the other side of Lambeth. And we had to carry 5 gallons of gas in a friend's truck to get home.
We got us a convoy.
you pass everything but a gas station.
Oh, my gosh. Yep. Yep. And so, you don't want to take the chance.
But comfortable? Oh, yeah, I can drive all day. I love driving it. Now, today I took a run out to the flower shop outside of town. Wife wanted another pot of flowers for the house. And so I pulled in and parked, and it's all social out there. You got to wait in the parking lot, one in the store at a time. And this guy assumed he was one of the owners because he come out and come right over. He said, I was just going to take a coffee break. And he says, I heard that rumble. And he says, I figured that's a hot rod. I had to come out and see. So he's talking to me about the car, and he tells me he's got a 37 Chev, but he didn't rod. It's all original, matching numbers. And some guys like that. But he is also working on a hot rod. So he likes both. So I've been getting my hot rod fixed the now and again, and so that's fun.
Magnet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally, so, Bill. You go over there to pick up my kids, and it's the cars are on the street. Mom, dad's truck, mom's SUV are on the street, and the big laneway, you got like a 6-car laneway, and all that's there is his car in the middle by itself.
But that's part of the fun, you know what? I'm looking forward to the time that I can go meet people. You know, I go for a ride and stop for an ice cream or something with Candace, and somebody comes up. You get to talking about maybe they had one, the story of their you know, youth or whatever, driving from here to there. I think it's a good way to meet people.
It's an old man magnet. Hey, come tell me about way back in the day when this was brand new, and bore me, please.
I enjoy that.
I'm sitting here right now thinking, God, holy crap, I got you. 20 minutes of the podcast that I got to cut out before we go to production.
Yeah. Don, when I get my car done, I'll come out and down, and we'll do a cruise, you and I.
I'm looking forward to it, Bill. I really am. I like cars. Yeah, I like cars. And
I'm okay you with know, that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh, that's cool.
That kills me. So, yeah, exciting weekends. So now. Yeah,
so now
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so now I'm focusing on, I sold the two old reprobate sheds I had out back, so now I'm designing my new rustic shed with a front porch for the backyard. Then, so that's my focus now.
I got a dad to-do list as soon as we have the plans for that.
Sounds like you're going to be busy.
Right?
Yep. Yeah, the wood for the base is coming tomorrow. And then we got to design the shed to go on it.
All right. Looks like I'm going to be busy sooner than later. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So... And now turkey season is over, and the previous podcast, I talked about my turkey. We talked about Scott's turkey. It is now time to talk about dad did not get out to hunt a whole lot. I would say Saturdays, dad, you only hunted the Saturdays, right?
I hunted a couple times through the week with you, a couple Wednesdays, but not too many. 'Cause then you got busy.
Yeah. So I think like a total, like you hunted maybe 5 times.
Yeah, and I didn't go out again at night when you went out again on Saturday either.
No, just 5 mornings. Yep, no, so dad only got out 5 times, I think, 5 mornings with us, and he didn't go out in the afternoons when we went back out, and I started.
That's nap time, isn't it?
Well, yeah. See, Bill, did you say you were 71? I'm sorry, I didn't, yeah. I misconstrued that earlier.
Those are the best naps after turkey hunting, getting up 3 o'clock in the morning. Hunter even was like, hey, that was the best nap I've ever had. So there was no afternoon hunting for us.
When it started to, after a couple weeks, and I hadn't had a crack at one, aside from my crazy spotting stocks or army crawling and not getting close, like taking 80 yard Hail Marys. And, you have one drop at that. You want to try it all the time. But I was starting to go, okay, I started to go out a lot more. And it was like, man, you know, it's 2 o'clock on a Saturday. Went out this morning. Got close, but not. Yeah, I'm going back out. And so I started. And that luckily, that's how I got mine. It was a Sunday afternoon going back out. But dad did not. Dad stuck to pretty much Saturdays. Went out a couple Wednesdays with me, but for the most part, stuck on the Saturdays. And really, the only reason I think we went out on the Wednesdays, Bill, because you messaged me and said you were going out, so I couldn't let you go and not me, because I would have turkey hunting envy.
Yeah, and those were the best opportunities when we were able to work from home. My mornings didn't start till later, so I was home and back by the time
Yeah.
Anything got too busy.
COVID wasn't all bad.
No, there was some benefits for turkey hunting opportunities for sure.
Yep, absolutely. So we did, but then finally on the last weekend, I said, Dad, you know, we got the Saturday, Sunday left. What are you doing? Are you coming? So, yep, Saturday morning, we're going. So we went back out to the magic turkey woods that I'm calling it just because from my hunt. And it was, I call they gobble. They came in on a string. I had one at 80 yards come in on a string from 3,000 yards away. And I thought this was the magic woods. When you called, they came. Like, they actually came. But it would just turned out that it was only that one day that they were that cranked up. And that's when I went back out and I got mine. In the morning, hung up at 80, went back out, snuck in, pulled them in within 5 minutes and got them. And that day they were so responsive. And it was, I thought, okay, this woods is awesome. So we went back, but it just happened to be just that day that they were that responsive, because we did hit it a couple more times and they were not responsive. So now we lead up to the last Saturday. So Dad's coming with us. We got Scotty coming with us. And believe it or not, we took all of our turkeys out of this woods this year.
Right, so, Dad? Just to go on a little bit of a question here.
Yeah.
What do you think was different that made it responsive day one?
You know what? I should go back and look that up. I really should. I should go back and look up moon phase. I should look up barometric pressures. I should look up everything I can, because that day was absolutely magical. That Sunday, I went out by myself in the morning. They were gobbling 3,000 yards away. And when it got light, nothing around me. So I snuck in further into the woods and halfway down a hill and started calling. And I figured, okay, I'll close in the gap. And I think I look back now, I thought it was about 500 yards. I probably snuck in about 300 yards. I closed the gap 300. So it was still 3,000 yards away. I mean, those gobbles were so distant that there was no way. And I was really distraught because I got up that early by myself and it's just me. So I know somebody's not the other side, might have a chance. I'm there by myself. And so call it. And within 10 minutes, there's birds right there. And there was a couple that played with me and came to about 100 yards and then walked on because some hens pulled them away. And I knew because there was live hens and I didn't have decoys out. And then it wasn't half an hour later and another turkey came from that way, 3,000 yards. It came right in. And this one walked right up to 80 yards. And I thought, it's going to keep coming. I don't have a decoy out. And a hen showed up behind it and pulled it back away. And so then I thought, well, I gotta go back. That was awesome. So I went back out in the afternoon. And it was literally, I had gobblers everywhere. And two, the one came right in. And I told that story. It was a five-minute hunt. From the time I sat down to the time I pulled the trigger was 5 minutes. He closed the gap, and I mean, he was 3,000 yards, and I'm thinking, wow. So that day was absolutely magical, whether it was morning or afternoon, and I should go look it up and figure out why.
It always amazes me with turkeys as to what is the trigger point. Is it temperature? Is it barometric pressure? Is it what? Because I know for sure when it gets too cold, they're not going to lay eggs. But when it gets too hot, do they get too put off?
Lethargic, lazy, don't care. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, you talk to Nick about fishing, and he knows temperatures of the water that is the most ideal for catching fish.
Yep.
Awesome. That's cool. But now you should take that and transfer that into the woods. I'm always tracking for deer hunting barometric pressure, moon phases, and I haven't come up with a real firm grasp to say that this absolutely is the magic weather formula, but it's still interesting to track and see if there's any patterns that are to present themselves, right? So
no, and
just as a food for thought.
No, and I agree, and I should go back and look, but I always said, right, that I want to keep turkey hunting fun. Deer hunting, I'm in there, man. I'm barometric pressure, constant monitoring, right? When it's on the rise, when it's going up to, like, I can't remember right now. I got to look it up, come deer season, because concussions. But like 102.9 or 103 point, whatever it is, like a radio station. And when it hits that and it's on the rise, not the fall, that's when the most bucks are prominent on the move, on the hoof, and everything else. And so I put all that work into deer hunting. I don't do that. I try to keep turkey hunting fun and light, but really when, like this year, when it comes down to crunch time, you want that information because the fun part of turkey hunting would be harvesting one at that point. So that day was magical. I don't know why. And we hit it more times after that. And it wasn't, I went out the next weekend. We went out I went out by myself because we hit five different woods this year on turkey hunting, five different properties. And that was the one we pulled all of our turkeys out of that one, but they were responsive in others and we had opportunities in others, but that day they were the most responsive. And I went back out to that one by myself and I didn't even hear a turkey. I didn't see a turkey. It was just squirrels. And I went to the same spot. I knew there was turkeys in there because I only shot one and I had four, five responding. So I knew there was gobblers in there, but what do you do? Right. So you're right.
It is that major problem is you didn't have your secret weapon. The man, the myth, the legend that's on the phone with us to help make the hunt that much more enjoyable, right? So I mean,
that's by for sure.
Oh yeah, way in.
You got it, Bill. You got it.
It would be. I will give you memorable.
Well, okay.
A couple of weeks ago, Todd said, or Scott, when he told his story, he said that the one he got was coming across the field, and there was one gobble in the woods the other side of the field, and then this one would gobble, and then this one would seem like he got all upset and would stomp around in circles. And then Todd made the comment that I'll bet that was father and son turkey. So you know what? He was right. The one in the field stomping around and gobbling and all mad had to be the dad.
Yeah. Making a racket. Tough, can't be quiet. Can't be calm. Oh, good grief.
All right. So you guys had some success. I haven't heard that.
So this Saturday, last Saturday of the season, we only got Saturday, Sunday. It ended on the Sunday, May 31st. So up we get. We're going to the Magic Woods. Away we go. We get out there. Said, okay, same thing. We are all now going to sit together. Me, Dad, and Scotty. So that's kind of cool because me and Scott both already got birds. So we have a good premonition that if the birds are on this property, we know where the bedroom is. We know where they want to go. Now we've hunted this land enough that, and still keeping it fun, that we know where to set up. And I had already scouted a spot. I just didn't know how conducive it would be to get in, sneak in, set up. And I knew it was far enough that it wasn't like when I've snuck Dad into 50 yards from the roost. And like, I'm on edge those mornings because you make one crack of a branch at 50 yards, they're gone. So I knew that this was going to be a lot easier because we were probably a couple hundred yards from the roost, but we were on their path where they wanted to walk. It was just, could we get in there and get hidden? So we get out of the truck. Dad's, no offense, Dad, but Dad's a little slower. So I said, all right, you two walk in. I'm going because I'm going to get in. I'm going to find the right spot, set up the blinds. You guys just come across the field. I'll come out and get you. So in we go, and I blast across this field, and it's a good little walk, and we get in. I get in there. I find the spot. It's now, to set this up, it's close to where Scott shot his. And the woods that we are looking at is where I shot mine. So Scott was in the same field, probably just 100 yards further down than us and kind of down the field rolls down into the bottom. And so he was down in the bottom. There is a finger that separates that bottom field where Scotty was and the top field, and they roll and meet together. So that finger is where I want to be because I don't know if they're going to come out of the roost and go down to the bottom field or come down to the top field. But either way, they're going to come walking down that point and they join up down in the bottom and carry on over to the next property. And we know that's what they do. That's where Scotty shot his. That's where I figured the ones that I had a chance at walked around me, followed that hen, and that's the way they went. So I know that's where they're going to go. So we're going to set up on that finger. So got in. On this finger is the spot. I just got to find the right spot where I could get Dad, myself, and Scott. And it, again, this finger, because there's a field below and a field up top, and then they go and they join where the field rolls, that finger is on an angle. So now it's the kicker is finding a spot along that finger where you put your chair and you're not going to roll down the hill to the bottom of the next field. But that finger is all grass.
That would make for a great story.
Right? So it's all tall grass, which great. We could, when you sit in a chair, it is head level. Like, that's awesome. But we got to find a spot where we're not going to roll down. So Scotty and I got in there. I set up kind of, and I said to Scott, okay, I go over and I get them. And I said to Dad, you stay out there. Give me your chair. So Dad's okay, because he's bought this $100 swivel hunting chair that four legs are telescopic. Each individual leg is telescopic. So you could take two legs and put them way out. And so you can hunt on an angle, on a side hill, and it will hold you up square. And
I got the same one, Don, and I absolutely
awesome.
Got armrests on it. I absolutely it's in my deer throne, the palace at my hunting spot there. And
why
I
am
tell
I
you
not
what, Don,
surprised?
If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right. I don't know how you carry that in and out. Because I take it out on the ATV when I go deer hunting, and I leave it.
Yeah,
it stays
up
in the tent on the platform.
That's the kicker, right? You got the base and you got the chair. And so you got to carry them both. The chair's got a strap, goes around you, but you got to carry that base. And that is the kicker. But your hands are full. So that's the one caveat. But I take the base from Dad, and I take the chair. I set it up in these weeds, and I telescopic the legs down. I got our little stick-in blinds, so I kind of defend with the grass. I put that up there for our defense. They can't see through the grass to see any movement. I'm always worried about movement. So that's what I put up. And now the problem is my chair. So I've got normally when I hunt turkeys by myself, I want to be mobile. I usually don't take a chair if I'm by myself. I use my turkey vest, put it down, set up against a tree. It's got kind of a built-in seat, but I still sit against a tree and I'm comfy. Or I have a turkey lounge chair that folds up, and if I'm not going to be that mobile, I'll take that in, but I'm really low to the ground on it, right? It's like almost on the ground. So, but
I
when
bought
I help
two
with,
of those.
Yeah, they're
I
nice.
Bought two of those, and actually, I use that every time with the pad and my son's just to get me off the ground a little bit. But I also use that if I'm going to do like a spot stock deer hunt too.
Yeah,
with the crossbow into the county bush that I go into. Not to cut the story up too much, just going on a little tangent.
No. Here, hey, yes, tangent away.
Those turkey chairs are transferable to deer hunting and with coyote hunting. If you're doing that, they're lightweight, they're worthwhile investment. They're comfortable. I've sat on so many chairs that cut off the circulation in your leg. You can't sit still on them. Yeah, they're convenient and mobile, but holy cow!
Yeah,
we found these ones, I believe, at Canadian Tire. They're a turkey lounger type chair. And I bought two of them, and I take them everywhere I go.
No, they do. They work good. Now, I will disclaimer that if you're a bigger dude, it ain't going to hold up. Hence, I'm the only one with one left, because I'm sure, I think, Dad, you had one at one time, did you not?
I've had three.
You could probably get away with one now you lost the weight.
Yeah, for sure.
But
I don't find them easy to get out of, though. I have to do a little bit of a
roll
thing to get out of it.
Yeah, you got to roll over. But I normally will. That's what I sit in when I'm by myself. So I'm low, right? I'm compact, and so when I hunt with Dad, he's sitting so high, and I put the blind down. If I sit in that, I can't see crap. So I got to take. So I have one of these like fold out aluminum director chairs. That's all camo, right? Doesn't have telescopic legs. So here's my concern. Now I've got to figure out how to set this up. And Scotty, he's got one of those just regular camp chairs, I call them, that I find uncomfortable. I can't sit in those for hours. That they fold up right down to nothing, and then you open them up kind of thing. They're the standard camp chair, but it's camo and a little bit cheaper of a chair, which I don't care about that. It's just not that comfortable to sit in that long. Well, it doesn't have telescopic legs. So we're looking, and the drop off, I get Dad right up against a bush. So we got some bush coming down, kind of covering him up. So if he has to move and stuff, it's going to kind of block that movement a little bit. If they come from the side, he could still swivel around if they come down below us. Now I got to get beside him, and I've got it. So I take his gun case and I fold it up, because Dad uses a double gun case, because he puts his tripod gun mount telescopic tripod in that on the second portion of the gun case. So it's thick. So I fold it over and put it under my legs, and that's enough. Scotty decides that he's not going to chance it. And so he goes down below us and watches the bottom field, but he's only 10 yards behind us down below. So he's right there with us still. But he's facing where he would normally sit on this finger down watching the bottom field. We're on the top field. So a little broken up, but that's okay. We're going to make this work. We're going to make it happen. Put the stakes in the ground. All good. Get dad in. Get him situated in the chair. Get the calls out, everything. It's still dark. We did it in record time. We're far enough away. I'm not worried that we, you know, bothered them in the roost or we're too close. They seen us or they're going to take off the minute they hit the ground. Okay, we're in good shape. We're actually, I like this spot. We're in really great shape. As the sun starts to come up, I hear a gobble way away. And I'm just like, ah, because I know the three, we are not that mobile. To go and close the gap like I did some Sundays ago, we're not that mobile. And so I was sitting there for another 10 minutes, which is a long time. Once the sun starts to come up, you're waiting for those gobbles, man. Like they should be rocking and rolling. And nothing. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh. And then all of a sudden, at 150 yards, it just, now we're, and then another one and another one. Now we're in business. I look at dad, his eyes are big. He's nodding. They're close. There's my gauge. Dad heard him. We're in the right spot. So at this point, I could carry on this story. I don't know if you want the realistic Todd side or if you want dad to take it over and tell the rest. Dad, what do you prefer?
Oh, I'm gonna tell it. You can jump in if you want. You're gonna argue anyway. Yeah,
you don't have to tell me. I am jumping in. All right.
And this, I've is, got a,
and this well, is the rest of the story.
Yeah. And I gotta back up and make a correction. When I said that turkey was the one that Scott got, it was stomping around and mad and gobbling. I meant to say that was the sun, because that's Todd. He's out there stomping around, no, telling everybody to be quiet.
You already said it was the dad. Because
I'm telling you, no, it was the sun.
Well, and I can relate too. But, so he was frustrated with the dad. I totally understand.
So anyway, I'm gonna back up right at the truck. We parked the truck.
Oh, I forgot about that. If Scotty was on, he wouldn't have let me forget. Yes, but by all means.
I was wishing Scott was with us tonight. I was hoping he'd be on because he was a big part of this hunt. But either way, first thing I do when I stand up after the drive in, this is early in the morning.
It's
as soon as I
black.
Get out of the truck and stand up,
it is pitch
I
black.
Have to go to the bathroom. So I just, if I don't go to the bathroom.
And now the rest of the story.
So if I don't empty my bladder, I can't sit for 2 hours in a chair. So I walk around the truck and I go to the fence side of the truck where we're parked on this farm road.
Along a fence road.
And there's weeds up to my knees. So I step into these weeds and I promptly step right off the road and I do a header right into the ditch.
All I hear is whoa, whoa, as I'm getting my
and
stuff
it's
out
pitch
of the
black, pitch black, no moon, and I'm laid out down in the weeds. And Scott runs over. Are you okay down there? Yeah. Heavens, yes. I've had a lifetime of falling. I know how to fall. No problem.
I was at first remorseful, but once I knew he was okay, I was trying not to laugh. Where Scott, he's not here to defend himself. He's got to be the kiss butt. Jump right in there. Help dad up.
Well, it's not over yet. So I get out. I climb out of the ditch. And Scott says, okay, I know it's dark. You can't see. There's a big hole right here because we hit the hole going in the truck. There's a big hole right here. Don't step in this hole. I said, okay. So I walk around the truck and I'm getting all my equipment on, and Scott, he's got his. And so he walks towards us and he promptly steps right in that hole.
Down he goes.
He pretty nearly does a header, but he catches himself. And Todd wheels around and here's this young stomping turkey, a Todd. He turns around. What on earth are you doing? What is it with you guys? And right away, I know Scott pointed out that hole for me and I didn't step in it. But Todd is on my case so bad about taking a header in the ditch that Scott stepped in that hole on purpose just to take the heat off of me. And he's that kind of guy.
That's a good friend here.
And I'm he's that kind of guy.
Holy old through osmosis. I am hunting with two of the most senile people on the planet.
Yep. That was awesome.
Oh, yeah. The blind leading the blind. So now you know the real reason, Bill, that I said, I'll meet you guys in there. I'm going to set up.
So Todd's gone. I haven't been in the field this far. I've never gone back this far. I've always dropped off at the second point out into the field. And so Scott says, I'll lead you in. Awesome. He's always thinking about
the blind.
Me. So Todd takes off. Scott leads me in and he says, okay, we're going to stand right here. Awesome. Okay. So that was no problem. So now anyway, the gobbles are getting more and more awesome. Like they're getting more often. And Todd surmises that they're on the ground now.
Well, and I was listening, right? So I'm trying to judge how many there are. Is there one and he's just fired up? Is there more than one? Is one goblin and one goblin right in succession? Is there two? Is there four? Is there five? You know, are they Jake's? Are they Tom's? Like, what am I hearing? Is it a deep rumble? Is it? And so you're, all this is going through your head as you're hearing these gobbles, right? And then you're trying to figure out, okay, where are they? Is that one? Okay, that one was in that direction there. Oh, that one's over there just a little bit more. They're all roughly the same distance. So I'm guessing around that tree and around that tree. And okay, so we've got three or four. So I'm guessing we've got, and I'm trying to message Dad, like with my hands, because I don't want to talk. I don't know how close they are. I just know they're close. And so I'm like holding up two fingers and three fingers, no, two fingers. And I'm pointing them out as they're gobbling. So they were getting pretty vocal. I mean, it was starting to get in pretty good succession. And then I thought I heard, and in these woods, it's not real thick. So it's not like you hear massive wings beating and they're in pine trees where they're smacking branches all the way down. It's hardwoods way up. And so it's just a matter of the, and then they glide. So I thought I heard one do that. And I thought, okay, now the gobbles seem like they're a little bit different sounding. I think they're on the ground. So at that point, I'm saying that I think they're on the ground. Now, what do we do? Because we haven't called yet. Do we call? Do we keep them interested? Like, what do we got to do here? What do we? And that's now, and you know, Bill, that's the stressful part.
That is stressful because I would have called out by that point in time already.
Yeah, and we might have called once or twice, Dad, like very soft, didn't we?
We didn't call as often as we normally do, but then you started calling a little bit and it sounded like they were getting closer.
Yeah.
Now, where I'm sitting on that kind of like that side hill down into that low part, my head is just high with the grass of the field. Like I'm eye level with the grass in the field. And so when they started to come out, they come out of a little small cut in the bush on the other side of the field. And they started to come out and it was hens. And that far away, I couldn't tell if they were hens or jakes or what they were. So you were whispering to me and it turned out that there was three hens, three jakes, and a big tom. And the big tom was the very last one to come out.
Four hens, three jakes.
Four hens, four jakes.
Yeah, it might have been four jakes. There was nine total turkeys.
Yeah, there was four.
Four hens, four jakes, and a big tom.
Yeah, and they all come out one after the other. And they were milling around and heading towards us.
Let me interrupt for one second, because the beauty, but between that, between me saying they're on the ground and starting to call more, because once they hit the ground, some gobbles got distant. And it was clear to me that we lost a couple gobblers. There was no question in my mind that Dad couldn't hear those gobbles. They walked away. But I knew we still had a couple close.
That just tells me, though, that the season was strange, because there's no way that late in the season, in my mind anyways, that you would have three jakes or four jakes, four hens, and the tom as well. Like it seems like there'd be fighting for the hens or something would be.
Yeah, it was a weird scenario to watch with them coming into the field. I'll say that. But I think what helped get them to come in. Like, we figured they were coming that way anyway. That was their path. We had patterned. If you can pattern turkeys, which I believe you can get in their way. They don't always go the same way, but if they go that way, they're going to go on that path. We were their way on that path. So we were ready to interrupt them. The kicker, I think, that really helped was Scott being down below us 10 yards, and he was probably 10 yards below us. Like, it was a good steep drop off there. So I texted him, and I was calling lightly. I didn't want to overpower. I just wanted to sound like an anxious hen, get their attention. I texted Scott and said, "Hey, do you mind calling? Because now it's going to look like we're walking away. They're going to, why are they walking away? We're coming to find you," instead of them standing there calling and we are getting louder, or they think that we're just not moving. They want us to come closer. That's going to trigger them. So I was actually texted Scott. And I think that helped a bit with Scott was calling as well. And so it sounded like it was further, and I let Scott call. I just stopped, and Scott was called. It sounded like they were down below, which then those toms thought, oh, in my mind, the turkeys were thinking, wow, we got to go that way because they're not getting closer. So we got to go after them. We want those hens to come to us. They're not. So we got to go after them. And that was my theory. Whether it worked or not, I don't know, because those hens were coming that way anyway. Right? The hens were coming to us. So the dad's eye level, and you could see them. They're there in the field. I'm trying to whisper.
Well, they're cresting the little knoll, and they're working their way towards us, but that tom is not coming. He's stomping around back and forth, puffing up, and then putting the tail down on the other side of the field.
Yeah, about 120
and
yards.
We were both thinking, oh, come on, Tom, because these hens and Jakes are going to walk to us, and they're going to bust us before that tom's in range. And as it turned out, as they worked their way, you know, two or three come and walk back, and then a couple come this way and walk back. And then this one hen was the biggest hen, and she came almost to us. She was like within 10 yards, and she was eyeballing us. And we were eyeball to eyeball with her, and she was, you know, buck. And we were, and then she, Scott was calling a little bit.
Well, she gave us, she knew we were there. I mean, they were, the problem after I looked at this setup and I thought, hey, we're in the perfect spot. After this is all said and done, I realized there's a better spot up higher up on the hill. I just didn't want to get bypassed by them, because they could have come out another point where we were, they had to walk by us regardless. Up, if we went up further, they would have had to been up where they were. But they might not have been roosted right up in that corner. They might have been and would have been cutting us off, and we'd have been out of it the whole time. However, being where we were on their path, which
kept you in the game.
It kept us in the game, but it made them very aware that we were there. And so if that wasn't a hen and it was a fired up tom and he was walking by, he was dead. But because that one hen came ahead of the other three and the Jakes and the tom's still 120 yards back, puffing up, courting those hens that were up on top of that knoll. This hen came right down and was 10 yards from us, throwing that warning that something's wrong. And so I remembered Scott telling me, and I don't know if I'd heard it before, but it really resonated. This season, Scott said, you ever get that hen that comes in close? I was reading an article, and they start to do that panic cluck and that warning cluck. And, you know, they know something's wrong and they're about to take off. And that he says, I read that you give it right back to them. Like, mimic
exactly
them,
what I do,
because it'll tick them off and keep them hanging around and go like, what's going on here? And so I started to do that with her, which did work. And Dad's going, stop calling. She knows we're here. And I'm going, no, I'm trying to tick her off. I want to keep her here. Because if she runs back, they're all gone. She's taking them away, right? That's no hen is going to come down and bring those Jakes and Toms with them if she takes off from us. So I'm trying to keep her. And I think that was the key. I think that really did play a role, because it kept that hen hanging around and it made the other turkeys go, what is going on? So go ahead, Daddy, you carry on again.
Well, they're milling around. Some are coming and walking back, and they're doing this thing, and this hen's there. And I said to Todd, that tom is not going to get across here. I'm afraid we're going to lose this. And then we realized that two Jakes had crested the knoll, and they were coming up in behind the hen, and they were probably about 25 yards. So I whispered to them, he said to me, they're both Jakes, and they had about 4 or 5 inch beards. He said, they're both Jakes. They're not big birds. And I said, you know what? It's the last day of the season. That rather than mess around and watch them all walk away, because it looked to me like that Tom was going to walk away, I said, I'm going to settle for a Jake. And I said to him, do you want to try and double on Jakes? Because Todd had a second tag. He says, yeah, okay, let's try and double on these two Jakes. Well, then this hen got a little nuts, and they started to run away, but they didn't go far. They went about another 5 yards and stopped and looked back. And I said, okay, we're going to lose the Jakes, too, if we don't do it right now. I said, I'm going to count us off, you know, 1, 2, 3, go. And before I could finish the count, another one made about a 5-yard move back behind the first one and then cut behind. And so to me, there was only one visible. And so I thought, okay, rather than lose it, I'm going to continue on. I was focused on that bird, and I never took my gun down. And so I just said to Todd, go. And I didn't even know if he could see one or not. I know I can only just see the one. And I pulled the trigger, and down he went, and I was successful. I got a 15-pound Jake, and I was happy with that. And Todd said to me after, he says, you know what? I'm glad we didn't double on Jakes, because I want to double on Toms. Yeah. So
I don't want to spend money to mount two Jakes. I want to mount two Toms.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the deal. And 15, of course,
sorry to cut you off, but a 15-pound Jake is better than a 3-ounce piece of paper that you're going to put in the garbage.
That's so true. That's the way I was feeling.
And yeah, you know, somebody.
Now, when Scott didn't know any of this was going on. And when the gun went off, I said to him, what did you do when the gun went off? You had no idea they were in front of us. You had no idea that I was even looking down the barrel at one. He says, no, I didn't have a clue. But he says, boy, that gun went off right behind me at 10 yards. He says, I was out of that chair and I wheeled around and I was watching that field for any birds coming through that finger and down into my area. But of course, they didn't come that way. So, but.
Yep. So down it went. And that's true. It wasn't. And normal guys, or not normal guy, but some guys would say, but you don't shoot the Jake, leave them for the next year. But honestly, sometimes I think that depending on the woods. This woods has got so many Toms in it. It's, you take that Jake, I am not worried. I know next year there's another Tom I watched up there. There's probably at least two that walked away. And then there's those three Jakes that we didn't shoot that have now made it through that season that are going to be Toms next year. So I know there's at least 5 or 6 more Toms in that woods that like that bedroom where they were. So I think next year, perfect, it's going to be just as good.
Yeah, COVID will be over and I can come join you.
Absolutely. You're more than welcome. So I am excited. So dad pounded that sucker and we got up and ran out and grabbed it and packed up and headed down to see our good buddy Dave Snook and taxidermist and weigh it and all that fun stuff. And so it was pretty good. It was still, it's super exciting. It's just, we knew once that hen started to throw down the warning clucks, and I was clucking with the other hens, they made the decision. They were not coming down that slope of that hill to join that bottom field. And you could tell they were starting to go back up the other way, and they were pulling that big Tom. So when those two Jakes came over that knoll to see what the heck is going on, and they were like neck stretched right up, looking down at us, trying to figure out what all the barking was and I was just giving it right back to her. They came to look. I think that was really what helped, because those Jakes were curious enough. They walked over that knoll 25 yards. Dad dropped the hammer. So it was.
In all fairness, if we'd have decided to do that, you know, a few seconds earlier, they'd have both been 10 yards closer and a distance between them, we would have had the pair. But we were still debating between us whether to wait for that Tom. And I thought, you know, yeah, I've done this too much. And that Tom was, he wasn't going to come. That hen was going to go, he's going to turn and run and take them all right back in the woods. And we'd have lost the whole opportunity. Yeah. So
I was watching all the other hens, and I was whispering to Dad. I was saying, they're not coming. They're not. And that's a Jake standing there. Dad's like, that's a Jake, right? That's a Jake. They're not coming. It's two Jakes now. They're not coming. Do I take the Jake? Do you want a double? Well, we can try. And all that talking, those Jakes are looking at us going, what is going on? Well, then the minute that you go to put your gun up, even though they're sitting on tripods, you still got that little bit of movement. That was enough to put the wariness into them. And I think Dad was lucky to pull the trigger on that one. He did. Cause I mean, it a split second later, it was highballing it out of that field. The other ones did.
And the truth is, that hand that was right in her face, like, she was still there. And I don't even know. I was so focused on that bird that I don't even know what happened to her,
yeah, whether she flew, ran.
And I don't know what happened to the rest. All I was focused on was that one that I had a bead on.
Oh, I watched that. That was that, it. The one Jake that was with the one Dad shot, he turned. And just as we were putting our guns up, he had seen that we were moving because they were pinned on us. And he was the first. He came in front of that one and then started wheeling away. And I mean, he went another 5-6 yards to our right, to Dad's way, towards the bush they came out of. And all the other hens and the other Jakes and Tom took off out of sight up over that knoll straight away. And then when Dad pulled the trigger, I mean, there was birds in the air. There was that. Tom hung around, though. When we ran up there to grab that, Scotty turned around and looked and went, that Tom's standing right there. By at 100 yards, and what are you going to do? The minute that we moved, he boom into the bush. He was gone. But he did hang around to see what was going on. The hens did not.
Well, he'll be around next year, and Todd Millard Family Guide Service worked its magic yet again.
Yeah, I don't know, though, that we want to be associated so much with the almost guy. Or, I mean, if you come, I'm cocky enough to say that if you come with us, you're going to get some spurs and a beard. And I don't know if I want to take that name from you. I don't want to be the guy that ruins the almost guy.
Yeah, me neither. To be honest with you, I think I'll come down for tag number 2.
Attaboy, Bill.
I like
it. Don't take it from him, Bill. Because when we went down to Snook, he says to me, he says, I'll bring the scale out. I was getting worried about you, Don. He says, because today's the last Saturday. He says, I'm sure glad that you filled a tag. He says, I don't know how you hunt with these guys for a whole month. I said, well, what are you going to do?
That's it.
He says, I was waiting on you guys. Value, right? What's that, Bill? Sorry.
They're there for the entertainment value, I guess.
Apparently. I didn't realize that so much. But you talked to Dave. And so... Dave's not a hunter. He's a taxidermist. And so Mr. David Snook, he hears all the stories from the hunters, right? So you gotta wonder how many have embellished and made it big and you know what I mean, have really pumped up their story when you're talking and he's retelling their story to you. And then you're looking at racks that are there and he's kind of giving you the story that it was relayed to him. But this year, I was asking him, I'm like, so how busy have you been, Dave? Like, how many birds you got? How many? This is a Saturday. By the time we get there, you know, it's 11 o'clock for each one of our birds. We usually mount most toms. Like I said, I think I've counted 13 or 14 mounts in my house. Dad, I know you keep saying you got no more room for tails on your walls. And so can't say mounted every bird, but mounted the majority. So Dave knows he expects to see the Millards come down there, he says, in May with our birds. And so I say to him, you know, okay, by the time we get there, we'd been there in succession now, the Saturday before that was Scotty's, then the Sunday afternoon with mine, and then with Dad's. And each time, you know, how busy are you? So when I took mine down, hey, how many guys have come in this morning? You know, Sunday gun hunting's now in for the last couple of years. We're on lockdown on COVID. Like, how many birds you got in? He said, you're the first one today.
Really?
Like, David, it's 4:30 in the afternoon, and you haven't had a guy.
He said it's been a bird. He said it was a tough year.
He said there's
Dave
so,
said it was yeah. a tough year. He's not seeing many birds.
The majority of the hunters that come in all the time and bring the stuff in, like us, he said they quit. They quit hunting after the first 2 weeks because the birds weren't responsive. It was going to be a tough year. And to me, I was just like, well, one day could be tough. Case in point, the next day could be awesome. Where with us, we had a weekend that was awesome, right? Scotty shot his on the Saturday, and then I shot mine on the Sunday. So those back-to-back days, that was pretty good. But for some, I guess it was so tough. He said, yeah, like very minimal. And each day we were in there, we were the only guys to take turkeys in, which that blows my mind. Absolutely blows my mind. So So from Dave's perspective, normally he's got guys in there all the time. Like every time that we've ever gone on a Saturday, anyway, you get there at 10:30, 11 in the morning, you're always running into guys dropping birds off, or at least hunters stopping in. And they're just this year, all three times that we were in there, there wasn't anybody there. And we were the only ones dropping birds off. So I do get it was a tough year. I know some people would argue that because I see the Facebook posts and stuff. But yeah, a tough year. We were still made out okay. Wasn't our best year, and it was tougher. But I just didn't think it was that tough that like guys were giving up, like Dave was saying. But no, apparently it was.
I appreciate you saying that stuff and trying to make me feel better for not getting the bird. But at the end of it, I still didn't get one, and I had tags. So. But thank you. I appreciate you. You being the doing the friend thing and making me feel better.
I do what I can, Bill. I do what I can.
Well, there's always next year, and it didn't make me want to hunt any less. And having the opportunity to hunt with my son and my kids just made it that much better. So
no,
we're gonna have to take some small victories.
Yeah, I agree. Just getting out in the woods is awesome. So that's pretty much gonna wrap up our turkey hunting stories, but we do have, we got guests coming on that have got some good stories they want to share. They reached out, want to be on the podcast. So we're excited to do that. Like I said, at the beginning of this one, we're going to have the Tom family on, and then we're also going to be talking shotguns, trap shooting, the difference between and sported clays and skeet and five stand and what you need to get into it and how you can do competition, all that fun stuff. We're pumped about that. So that's looking coming down the pipe too.
Congratulations once again, Don.
Yeah, and good luck with your Volkswagen, Bill. I'm looking forward to seeing that finished build.
Yeah, thank you. We'll be in touch, okay, guys?
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Okay, that'll do it for today. So until next time, on behalf of Redneck Country Podcast, I'm Bill Tom.
I'm Todd Millard. And Scott Goodall?
Nope, I'm good.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to be part of the podcast, by all means, hit us up at podcast@theredneckcountry.com. Again, that's podcast@theredneckcountry.com. And be part of it. Join us and have a blast. I hope you enjoyed it. Sitting around the campfire having some fun.